Welcome to Surfer.gay, the podcast. We share gay surf stories from around the world. I'm Patrick, and I will be your host. In this episode, I had a conversation with Rachel. And just a little more than a year ago, I got this mail from Rachel about her studying queer surf experiences. And I thought it was so interesting that someone wanted to study these experiences. So there were several of the queer surf communities that helped post her need for volunteers. And I hope so. Some of you actually joined in. Now, it's been a year and Rachel has finished her studies. And I'm so excited to hear what she found out. So hi, Rachel, and welcome to the show. And please introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Rachel. I'm she, her. And my home surf break, I live in France and I live in Arcachon. So that is west of Bordeaux. So on the coast.
Yeah. So
if we Bordeaux, it's not necessarily the center of France, but kind of the west side of France. And that's so we're just above what's considered the Basque country. So people might be more familiar with Biarritz. I don't live in Biarritz. I wish I did, but I do love Arcachon. So it's on a bay. And so I don't have waves. I actually live like a 7-minute walk from the beach, but this is like, it's like a bay. So it's, you know, it's good for swimming and stand up paddling, but then for the waves, I have to go around. So I go down to what's called Biscarros. So that's another town that's about, oh, I don't know. It's like a 40-45 minute drive. I usually surf there. So Bisca Nor, there's another beach called La Sally. And I think Biscarros does show up on the surf reports.
Yeah.
La Sally doesn't.
No. Amazing.
Or it might. On some of them, it might actually. So yeah, it's Atlantic coast surfing, and which I like to say, I've had people tell me, like, if you can surf in the Atlantic, then you can surf anywhere. That's what people like to say. I'm sure a lot of people feel like that about their break. I do have to say, though, that once I got to surf in Byron Bay at the pass, and that was like kindergarten class. You literally just walk out and then stand up on a wave. So I thought, wow, I'm glad I didn't learn to surf here, or else I would have been super disappointed with the Atlantic coast.
I totally get that. The Atlantic coast can be quite harsh, especially during the winter.
Yeah. Oh, To be honest, I wish I could say that I winter surfed. I've tried, but it's just too much for me. I am not by any means, like, I'm still really like a beginning level surfer. I just, you know, I'm out there on my foamy most of the time. So let's not have any illusions that I like, you know, tear it up out there on big waves or anything. I just, you know, for me, it's just more about trying and having fun and personal challenge.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
but you could. I've seen a couple of people who are shredding pretty hard on the foamy.
You're right, and it's becoming more popular, to be honest.
Yeah.
So yeah.
We have Jamie O'Brien, I think his name is. He surfs Pipeline on his foamy, which is just insane.
Oh my god! Wow, that's impressive.
So that's the image that I have of you now.
Right.
It's like big waves, shredding the gnarly waves on your foamy.
No, and the Atlantic gets pretty, like lots of sideways action happening. It can get pretty mushy. And I don't know. And I did surf in Portugal once and it was the same thing. It's just, it's a lot of battling. I don't know. But, I do it. It's what I have. I do it. And I'm not going to complain.
Ah, amazing. So the reason why I wanted to get you on this podcast is because I don't know how long it is. It's probably been a year or so since over a year that you reached out and you said that you're doing this study of queer people in the surf or in the lineup. Can you just kind of like introduce us to your, because you were doing this study, and just introduce us to the study that you did.
Sure. So I was doing a master's in psychology, looking to go into therapy, and as a queer person myself who grew up under a lot of, let's say, religious oppression, I have this kind of thing about, a lot of times therapists are kind of like the wounded healer. And so this is kind of where I was going with this. And I did my master's degree with Brunel University in London, and there were a lot of limitations. At the master's level, there are a lot of limitations of what you can take on as a thesis, because they don't want you to do anything that could cause trauma to anybody. So for example, if I went in looking at queer people's experiences, because that's the thing that I really did want to somehow look into, the experiences of queer people, because just me growing up under a really oppressive religious system growing up, you know, I really have a heart to help people who have found themselves, you know, kind of traumatized from, you know, extreme religious upbringings. But that's not exactly something I was allowed to tackle with my studies, because you can't, as soon as you start talking about something traumatic, you know, this person might have a reaction, be triggered, and I'm not, you know, equipped, you know, to help them. So I thought, okay, well, what can I talk about that combines something that I love, because that way my thesis won't be like painful, it will be fun. How can I make my thesis fun is what I was kind of going for, and how can it be super interesting to me? And I thought, well, I do love surfing, and this is something that for me is just something I've taken on late in life. And I am going to divulge that I'm 50 years old now. And, you know, I'm like, I still am just really, I'm always going to feel like a beginning surfer. I'm never going to be, you know, competitive in any way. It's just really for me to have fun. So I've been kind of in this kind of fun learning how to surf mode for years. Have surfed in different places, but I just thought, well, why not try and combine that with the queer community? Because I started seeing online, I started seeing queer surf groups like on Instagram. So the Queer Surf Club in particular, that's out of England. And then just started, you know, poking around some more and realizing, this is kind of a thing, you know? And just even coming from a feminist and woman's perspective in terms of like what surfing looks like and how, you know, and I can't speak for men, but I know that for women, it's like you have to look good in a bikini and you have to be able to surf in a bikini, because these are the images we give when you go into a surf shop. You often see, it's getting better, but you often see pictures of men on a surfboard surfing, and then you see women in a bikini standing next to a surfboard modeling clothing. So, you know, as a woman, I already feel this kind of strange, weird, like image pressure. And then I started thinking about queer individuals. And then as I started following some trans surfers, thinking, wow, how do they cope? And just knowing trans individuals who like don't enjoy being in a swimsuit, for example. I started thinking of things like that. And how do queer surfers cope in the water when you have such a dichotomy of really masculine, strong masculine identities, and really this kind of bro culture happening? And then you also have the like surfer chick that's, you know, have these cute little bodies in bikinis or super cute wetsuits that like go way up your ass crack, and nobody finds this comfortable, you know, but for some reason this is what we're expected to surf in. And I've lost my share of swimsuits while surfing, because, you know, they just like, so, you know, I thought there's more to be explored here, especially within the queer community. So I, you know, kind of pitched that to my supervisor, and I was really happy that it got approved, and I was like, well, this is gonna be fun. So I legit had fun doing a thesis. I was so happy to be able to talk about surfing and the queers.
Before we kind of dive into your study, I just want to, because you said you started late surfing, how did you get into surfing?
I think I just, because I'm probably like, I'm from the West Coast of the United States. I have California family. I'm Scorpio, which is a water sign. So I'm like, everything about me loves sunshine and water and the ocean. And I just, you know, I had a friend who started surfing, and I thought that sounds super cool and it looks really badass. So why not just like try this? So the first time I ever surfed, it was I don't know, maybe 10 years. Oh gosh, no, seven, 10 years ago in Australia, a friend, I said, hey, I want to surf. And he's like, okay, I'm going to let you go out with my buddy. Cause my friend didn't surf, but his friend, you know, whatever, he had a friend. And so he got his longboard, a really cute, really nice longboard, and just literally brought me out back, had me try to stand up on this board. We were at Manly, I think. Manly, that was the first place. I mean, just like, no, you know, I don't know. It wasn't a foamy. It was a legit surfboard bringing me out there. So, but, you know, I thought this, from there on, I just really enjoyed it. And
you did?
When I could. I was living in Paris for a long time, so could only do it on, you know, vacations. And and like you said about, you know, traveling where there are waves, this is kind of one of the reasons we moved kind of to where I am now, is expressly so that I could surf.
Ah, so, cool. Yeah. And that's because I find it's kind of fascinating, because you have all these people growing up and they're next to the water with the surfing kind of community and culture around them. But once you're kind of older and then learning this new sport, because let's be honest, like learning how to surf is mostly beating.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It is. It's constant. Yeah, it is getting a beating all the time. Yeah.
Sure. So what made you stick with the surfing? Because not everyone is up for taking a beating every time they do their sports.
Yeah, I know. I've wanted to give up, especially, you know, like the time or two I've hit my head on the sand and, you know, tweaked my neck. You know, I'm just like, and I'm a mom too. I'm like, this is, should I really be out here doing this? This is a safe thing for me to do. Yeah. And I did have a go at being on the Surf Life Saving Club, and this, I got hit in the head with a board and it opened my head and I had to be rescued and everything. kind of the irony of being in surf rescue. And so, you know, that kind of, I did start to, Patrick, say, I don't know, is this a really a good idea for me to do? Because especially when you get older, it's harder to recover from injury. Yeah. You have really a sense of your mortality. I have kids, you know, but I think what I had to do was just in my mind, just say, I'm out here to have fun. That's it. Whether I accomplish certain like surfing goals or not, I kind of just had to, if I want to keep doing this, I'm going to have to be realistic, and I will probably always be struggling. And I think that's okay. You know, I think making peace with that and learning how to have fun with it for me at my place in life, that's where it's at. And so if I can, I think it's just about perspective. So if I can do that, I did have a scary moment last year where after I surf, I like to just go play in the waves a little, but I did get carried out. And I, you know, even though, you know, don't swim against the waves, swim across, let it, whatever. I got carried out by a riptide and I panicked. And so fortunately there were other surfers out there and I waved and caught a ride. You know, it's things like that, that it's not just the taking a beating. It's like realizing that you against the ocean, you're really not going to win.
No.
And I think this is something that every surfer has to just kind of, you know, make peace with and just be careful.
Yeah. You will be humbled by the ocean.
At
some points. And it's, as you're saying, just making peace with that. It's so important, because you really do have to respect the powers and the energy that is coming through the waves and the ocean.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's amazing that you actually like stuck with it and actually just got in it, even with all of these beatings. And
well, thanks for being impressed, Patrick. I think it's just probably, you know, again, I think with age, you learn to balance your expectations. You manage your expectations a little bit. You're less and less idealistic the older you get, you know. This is kind of the place I'm at in life, is becoming less and less idealistic, and things become increasingly more gray, and I don't have to, you know, be good at everything, but as long as I'm having fun, that's what's important.
And I love that perspective. It's just like, it is all about just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a perspective, Patrick, that I found mostly inside the queer community that I think that we don't see as much in the more hegemonic surf culture, where it's more about, you know, being a quote unquote good surfer, killing waves, attacking waves, dominating the ocean. And what you said about being humbled by the ocean is another thing that I found inside my study, is that a number of queer surfers would say, it's so ridiculous when you see kind of the classic surfer bro go out there and try to dominate waves when, you know, as a queer community, the rest of kind of, the rest of like society tries to dominate what, you know, we feel oppressed in so many ways. And so when we go out into the ocean, it just doesn't make sense to try and dominate something. And it's just, you know, I found that a very interesting and unique perspective inside the queer community, that when you have an oppressor in society, it doesn't make sense to then go into your free time and the time that makes you feel good and when you want to have fun, to then just like try to dominate something that is nature, that is not something you can really control.
Oh, and that's really interesting, because as you kind of saying, because I'm also all for just having fun and just enjoying, or I'm really enjoying just being in the nature and kind of having fun out there, even though like every now and then we all take a beating, but it is mostly just having fun with it. And you just kind of touched a little bit upon it. It's like you found this in your studies, that this is like a common thread within the queer community. It's more of having fun more than necessarily dominating or performing. Is that
totally. Yeah. Would you like me to go into the three major findings?
Yes, that would be amazing.
I can do that, because I wanna continue talking about what you just said, but maybe I'll do it in a more organized manner.
Yeah, please.
Well, I'll just kind of set the stage for the study, is that it's a qualitative study. So for anybody who's not familiar with studies, you have quantitative, which are more numbers and statistics. And so like, you know, how many surfers out of whatever are gay, you know, and it's more like about statistics. So quantitative studies are numbers. And then qualitative studies are about words. So it's really just like words versus numbers. And sometimes you'll get studies that's like a mixed study that is both quantitative and qualitative. So I took on qualitative because I hate numbers. And numbers have never been my friend. I'm more of a literary person.
Yeah.
And I really genuinely enjoy talking to people and finding out about their stories. And one of the reasons that qualitative studies are viable and a legitimate and thing we need in research is because this is how we understand how people live their experiences. Yeah. So it's one thing to say, you know, to give a statistic about how many people do X, Y, and Z, and how many people experience homophobia, for example, in the surf space. Okay, well, that's just a thing that we know, that's a fact. But what is the lived experience and what does that feel like? And so what are the implications when, for example, a person says, I don't go surfing, like I go surfing to kind of escape the dominant culture, you know? And what is it like to, you know, having statistic about board shorts, for example, like there are statistics about how many women actually buy board shorts in the men's section, because women's board shorts are not actually board shorts. They are short. They don't protect you from the board whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so they're actually not functional. So how do women actually feel about that? What is their experience? Well, it means they don't get good surf gear. They feel this way about their body. They end up with rash and so forth.
Yeah.
So this is why I took on a qualitative study. And it was just really fun. So I interviewed 16 surfers.
Yeah.
And I put out on social media, on Instagram accounts, and I, you know, research, look for people like you and anybody who had a queer surf club all over the world, and said, hey, would you be willing to post my advertisement so that I can, you know, talk to anyone in your community who might be willing to do so?
Yeah.
And so then I actually got more people than I needed, and it was really hard for me to say, to turn people away. But the fact is I conducted like 45 minute interviews with each person. And then you literally have to transcribe that whole thing. And then you have to code it for themes.
Yeah.
That is like just a hell of a long process. So I had to stop somewhere.
Yeah.
And what that means, though, is that I got what I wanted was a really heterogeneous sample, meaning varied, lots of different experiences, because surfing is kind of tricky because depending on your level, you are going to position yourself in a certain place in the water. So me, who spends a lot of time kind of in the foam, the small waves, there is nothing about me that goes way out back and sits in a lineup. I have never actually done that. I do not have the skill level to do that, nor do I have the courage. It's just not something that, you know, I'm going to do. Yeah. So it depends on, are you, and again, I don't really love saying a beginner, intermediate, or good or bad surfer. It's just like where you position yourself in the water will speak a lot to your experiences. So people who do sit in a lineup out back with a lot of male surfers on a shortboard, that environment is going to be different than the environment that is in the foam, on foamies, kind of in the, you know, kind of chaos that is all of that situation. And so that's one thing to be aware of, like when you do a study, like what was the sample group like? And then in terms of the experience level of the surfers, I had people everywhere from beginning, middle, advanced, a couple people who were competitive. And so not everyone's experiences are going to be the same. And then just think about inside the queer community, that's a whole alphabet soup, right? So the identities are just all over the place, and a lot of identities are crossing over. So you have a lot of people calling themselves lesbian, queer, gay by the same person, or trans, queer, or just like some trans individuals don't necessarily want to refer to themselves as trans, you know? And so it's really interesting because you get such a mix on the spectrum and people identifying with more than one thing, actually. So in terms of disaggregating the data and saying my sample group are, you know, 3 lesbians, 5 gays, you know, transfer, it's like pretty much most of the population I cross-identified with all sorts of things. You know, and I think we realize that inside the queer community, like at one point in our lives, we might identify as strictly gay. Oh, now I'm queer. You know, it's different. And we have our reasons for all of that. But most people identified as queer first. And I think this is a very modern thing to identify with, as being queer. And then, let's see. So that's my sample group. So some of the questions that I asked people, and this was interesting, is that a lot of people never thought about this before. They've never thought about queerness and surfing. So for a lot of my participants, this is a separate thing, and they've never given a thought to the fact that they are like a queer surfer, or that queerness comes into their surfing at all. So for example, if I say, let's see, what coping strategies, if any, related to your queerness do you use during a surf session? Some people were like, coping strategies, do I? And so I would, you know, sometimes suggest, well, some people say that, you know, one individual might act a little more, he might code switch. So a gay male, he might, if he's hanging out in a lineup of a bunch of like het males, very, again, I'm just like, you know, kind of aggro types that we all kind of know, then he will, for his own safety, just kind of take up whatever is going on there and not be like his true gay self. And so this is something that I think sometimes in the queer community, we don't realize how much we actually adapt to the environment as just a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
And then when I was asking people, like, how does your queerness inform your surfing? That was a question that people just were like, what do you mean? So yeah. Back to Patrick, when we were talking about having fun, I said, well, you know, in a lot of studies, this is seen inside studies, they show that a lot of heterosexual men tend to describe their surf experiences as attacking waves, killing waves, dominating waves, going against the waves. And so when you ask, and then in women's studies, you ask women, how do they describe their surfing?
Yeah.
They talk about being one with the wave, going with the flow, being one with. And so this was interesting because then inside of this kind of binary, when you're talking to queer surfers, they could, you know, kind of identify with all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, where some people were like, yeah, I do like a bit of aggressiveness on a wave, but I also know that I can't dominate nature. And I think this is kind of a key thing. And I'm not saying that all queer surfers, you know, have that mentality by any means, but it was a common theme.
Yeah.
And a lot of queer surfers, because surfing tends to be a place of therapy, whether we realize it or not, they're not there to like kill and attack things.
Yeah.
They're there to have fun, to resource themselves, to be in the environment.
Yeah.
So my three main
just before you jump into those three, it's just like a thought that I had where you're talking now, is that with so many queer people having like feeling more one with they were nature and not necessarily wanting to use those words as dominating and being that aggressive. It's also kind of interesting to see, for me is to hear that thinking of like the nature and like the holistic part of it, like, oh, we find ourselves in this lineup where we're one in nature, where we kind of belong into the nature and we kind of want to go flowing with nature. And as you said, like, yeah, all the way in the beginning, where you like coming from a religious upbringing or restrictions, where a lot of this religious environment would say, oh, this is, you're not from the nature, this is wrong with the nature. But then having all these queer surfers kind of gravitating to be one with the nature and kind of finding their space and spot and relationship where they're kind of belonging in the nature.
Yeah, that's very powerful, Patrick, because I have had a number of surfers, because we do have a large part of society tell us that what we are is unnatural, right?
Yeah.
And I've had quite a few surfers tell me that this is kind of a place where you do find healing when you become, because it's like, I'm just me. This is the ocean. I have nothing to prove to the ocean. The ocean embraces me. I can be here. I feel good. And when I am in this place of oneness, this is when I feel like kind of like just myself.
Yeah.
And so there absolutely is a, I was going to say something and now I lost it, but just, you're right. I mean, I just echo what you're saying. This kind of the power of, I'm okay. So what's interesting too, is there is a dichotomy. And I almost wanted to name my study like the dichotomy or the paradox of surfing, because on the one hand, you do have the really strong gender norms inside mainstream cultures, mainstream surf culture, very, very strong gender binary. So very masculine men, very, you know, feminine women. And it has to be that way because this prevents then, this speaks to homophobia because it prevents the men from seeming gay, because there's a lot of mateship inside surfing, like the bros, the mates, encourage each other. And here we are in water, we're in body hugging clothing, we see each other's form, we're in water, it's very intimate. And there's this kind of like homophobia that has to set up the binary in a really strong way to be able to objectify women, to have the surfer chick, to impress the women, to impress each other, because after all, we are, you know, strong head males. And so there's this like overperformance of gender norms inside surfing that is extremely strong. So you have that. And then you also have, when you're in the ocean, everybody on the other hand, I guess let's talk about cold water, because mostly in cold water, we're in wetsuits and typically it's going to be a black wetsuit, right? So we're all kind of looking like seals. And it's so interesting because it's kind of the great neutralizer in a way. So if you aren't, let's, you know, we're not, if we're not in like Malibu or something like that, you know, if we're not in a place that is really like warm water, warm surfing, like in Hawaii or something, where you don't necessarily have people surfing in bikinis, but I'm going to say probably most of the surfing world wears a wetsuit. At least the people that I spoke to, there aren't very many people who legit like year round surf in a swimsuit. So it is interesting that the surf space actually becomes a very gender neutral place that can be an extremely safe place for surfers and the place where they can really feel like they're themselves and not have to adhere to like all the crap that they had at work and in society and with the, whoever. They come in and you just kind of wash off the crap, you know, society, and we all look the same. That's the thing. And that's the beauty of, I think, this, I guess in some locations where you are literally all just in a black wetsuit and it kind of doesn't matter anymore. So some surfers actually told me, oh, well, I've never really noticed the kind of the strong binary just because once you're in the water, you're in a black wetsuit, it doesn't matter. You absolutely have that. But then you also, I guess, in mainstream surf culture, imagery and all of the media around that, you absolutely have this other thing. So in terms of like the three main findings, it was number one, queer people and their ways of being with their bodies, their ways of being with their engagement in surfing, and the ways of being with their community. So with their bodies, it was kind of what I was talking about. You know, you go in and you're kind of just, it's a great neutralizer. But also then there was a lot of conversation around like just surf wear. And I did ask specific questions about surf wear. I asked people, what do you wear? What's practical for you to wear? What's not? And so, you know, a lot of the women are very disgruntled that, you know, we're slated to wear bikinis and board shorts that are just are not actually board shorts. A lot of women felt that way. And then some men expressed how it's just not fair that we just get black wetsuits and not the colorful, cute ones like the ladies do. So I had a lot of queer surfers shopping in each other's kind of sections of the surf shop. Mostly women, though. I'm going to say most of the women in the study did shop in the men's section.
For board shorts or for wetsuits?
Both. It just kind of depends. Like some of the women, like I'm tall and I actually wear men's wetsuits mostly just because it's really hard for me to find a women's wetsuit that's long enough. And then in terms of engagement, having to do with your attitude, like why are you here? What does surfing do for you? And it's kind of, we touched on that already, is just like, I mean, there's a therapeutic aspect, there's a fun aspect, there's a kind of being with nature aspect. Again, this is, you know, kind of generalizing right now because not everybody feels that way.
No, of course.
But overall, I'm going to say that there's a lot less aggression happening in terms of how queer people approach, or a lot less like dominant talk, you know, killing waves. A lot less of that. And then I had, it was really also powerful that a number of surfers said, as I either, you know, transitioned or I had a number of non-binary surfers and they said, as I kind of became more myself, I got better at surfing because I was more comfortable with my body. So the surf space was actually a place where they worked through their queerness, becoming who they are and how they identify, and saying, you know, once I stopped kind of adhering to the, for example, the Roxy surfer chick,
yeah, and
took on more masculine traits of myself. I felt stronger as a surfer. I felt more courageous. I took more risks. I kind of like was stronger in the lineup, that sort of thing.
So
that was really powerful to see how surfing really goes hand in hand with the queer journey.
Yeah.
And the both of those things are kind of work together.
Yeah. I just stop a little bit about it.
You just have to stop me because yeah. I'll just keep talking without taking a breath.
Because I find it so interesting that being in the water and also for my own journey, it's like once you kind of get into the water and again, like you take those beatings and you get humbled, but you also learn how to kind of handle yourself under so huge pressure from nature where you might get a hold down or like you getting tossed around and you get the nose and everything filled up with water and you have this cold water running through your wetsuit and it's nobody would say it is pleasant. Right. Like you do get all of this and you kind of what I've always said living in Norway and surfing up here is that whoever that has the I would say the balls, but like whatever the equivalent could be, like yeah. whatever I had to have the guts to go out in the cold water, surf there and paddle and be tossed around by the waves, they get the respect. It's yeah. not like, yeah. especially in the cold water surfing, it's not like super easy where you just kind of skip into like a board shorts and grab your board and kind of.
Yeah, it's a whole commitment. It's a whole yeah. thing. There's so much preparation and so much, and then after work too, because you gotta yeah. like, yeah, I mean, even after, yeah, I talked to a guy in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
And oh my God, how cold it is. And he's yeah. wearing a wetsuit that I didn't even know existed. You know, it's like yeah. practically a diving suit. You know, it's just really, you know, and absolutely you have to respect people. And I think it's that resiliency, right? And I think
yeah.
the community anyway, shows a lot of resiliency, but I think, you know, to your point of taking a beating and going out there, you are showing a certain amount of resiliency. And I think it is something that probably, you know, for surfers anyway, this is part of the, you know, the journey for surfers of resilience.
Yeah. And that's so good because like building that resilience, like for so many queer people, you really have to build up a huge amount of resilience, just taking all the crap that you get from the mm-hmm. society or mm-hmm. the community or whoever that's around you, and then kind of transforming that into the ocean. And like, you know that this is easy, like this is nothing compared to what I normally do on land. So this is kind of not necessarily easy, but it's the doable or you can handle it that makes it, you become more comfortable with your own body in the water, getting hold down or held down or whatever, or just kind of getting into the paddling where you're getting stronger and kind of enjoying the nature in a bigger way. And I think that is so kind of cool to hear you saying that you also find this in the studies, that this is kind of like the little bit of a journey of kind of accepting and coming into your own body where you can go into this surfing scene and into the water and kind of learning your body in a different kind of way, because you are kind of floating-ish, and especially with a wetsuit, you float so easily, but you have to learn how your body is reacting to all of these different external forces.
Yeah, absolutely. And becoming comfortable with your body and how you want to be in your body.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we know that, you know, a lot of things in psychology is kind of mind over matter. And when we are feeling, for example, dysphoric in our bodies or not strong, you know, and we're feeling not ourselves, it's going to be really hard in the surf space to have confidence, you know, and that even becomes a safety issue. That's one of the things that I mentioned, because, you know, when you're surfing, either, you know, it's always best if we don't hesitate, right?
Yeah.
It's best if we kind of like have this kind of mental confidence and, you know, if we're going to go for a wave, then you better do it kind of thing. Otherwise it's just going to be a disaster. And so this was just such a really interesting and encouraging thing that I found when people came into their bodies in a way that felt like them and had that journey of becoming, then they just like, they're like, yeah, my surfing just improved because I was finally being who I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that the ocean and nature and even the sport of surfing can actually offer that to the queer community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there is legit now a thing called surf therapy. I don't know if anybody's aware of that, but it is a thing. It's surf therapy. It's kind of, and there's water therapy is a thing now in ocean. So it's called blue therapy. Mm. So you have kind of green therapy. We know that like going for walks in nature and that sort of, you know, we've all seen the kind of TikTok. I mean, I'm going for a stupid walk for my stupid mental health sort of thing. But blue therapy is also related to being in the water and surf there. There are a number of organizations now that are just specifically surf organizations for mental health and therapy modality actually. So so it's awesome. So if anybody, So that's really, I find that quite powerful. And then the last point was just the ways of being in our community and the fact that, you know, surfing is an individual sport. And so, and it can be quite egotistical, you know, we can all be very selfish also, you know, in our circus, you know, how much sometimes, you know, we're like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can to get out and get a surf, you know, to the neglect of other things or it's just like, it's just you out there and which is great, you know, and that has its, that has its place, but also it's hard for a queer individual to take on, like, let's say we do encounter kind of that hegemonic attitude that's in our face. Maybe people are getting aggressive in the water, or maybe you're getting double takes because, I had one surfer that, who is trans male has top surgery, he has scars. And so he'd have people kind of doing double takes and these, you know, one person's like, what happened to you? And he didn't, when he doesn't want to explain, he's like, yeah, shark bite. So, you know, things like that. And for sometimes I talked to another, woman who said that when she pulls up in the parking lot, so she's in California.
Yeah.
She said she looks at the bumper stickers, on the cars to kind of understand what kind of environment she's going into. And I've had a number, especially California gets pretty aggro. And I've talked to a number of California surfers who just like, you've got a lot of aggression out there. So as a queer individual, when you're in an environment that could be aggressive, hostile, you know, whatever it is, it's hard to take that on as an individual, which is why queer surf communities now are just so important. And if you think of a lot of like queer studies came on the back of feminist studies. And before there was a queer group, usually there was a women's group.
Yeah.
And so we've seen a huge uprising of women's groups of different things, you know, you kind of name it, wherever there's like typically male in society, well, then the women create their group. And now the queers are creating. So you need that sense of community because it's really hard to take on your own. And it makes it more like a team sport in that way. And because surfers, it's not a team sport. So you need to join a club, right? If you want to be with people, like-minded, your people you get on with. So that sense of community is important. And then, you know, the obvious aspects of that are going to be support, encouragement. And so, you know, anybody who's familiar with following queer surf groups on Instagram or whatever, you'll see they have just a blast together. I mean, it's just all about fun and games. And a lot of these groups meet up outside the waves as well. Like just have, you know, we go to the pub or we go to where we're just going to have a, you know, oh, it's flat today, so let's swim or let's hang out or let's have a fire, you know, in San Diego, I think they can do this. I don't remember. Some places they can build fires on the beach, you know. The community aspect is super important. And I did talk to a number of people in the studies who I didn't know that queer surf groups existed. And so I was the person, the bearer of good news. And they're like, oh my God, well, I'm going to, you know, see how I can become involved. And I live in France and I'm not near a queer surf community, but it is fun for me just to see the other groups, you know, just that alone is like, yes, the people are out there. We're becoming visible and, you know, eventually like, how can we change ideas around surfing and make it more inclusive and, you know, have allyship. So allyship is a really important part because some participants expressed when they have like their local surf shops have, for example, advertised the queer surf clubs get togethers or maybe competitions or whatever it is. So the visibility, the allyship, the community, the support, the just, and actually it also breaks down a barrier, the entry barrier for queer surfers. Cause especially like, you know, as a, someone who just kind of came into surfing late in life, like it's super intimidating. Like I hate it when I'm the only person out there and it's just all males out there. I'm just like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I'm just like, and I try and find somewhere else. And then this is not unique to queer, the queer community, because I think a lot of women feel this way. And then other surfers, like nobody enjoys hanging around an aggro surfer, right? It's super intimidating, like to have all the 20 something year olds out there in a lineup. So it is important to have this community in that way.
And that I can kind of see that, like the amount of people that I'm speaking with or interviewing or writing this magazine about, and all this gay queer surfers that I'm in contact with, they're all saying like the support and the community part of it, like that's something that is so vital to kind of either get into surfing or keep surfing, or just having some more people around you that is like supportive and that you could go out and have fun with. Not,
and a safety net. Yeah. It's a safety. It's a buffer from the other, you know, people or parts or areas that aren't so friendly. So you kind of have this nice little safety bubble to play in, to experiment, to try things. And also the other thing too, is I found that a lot in the queer community, a lot of people are more willing to take up, to like get away from the whole idea of the shortboard. So that was really cool. Cause you know, I mean, surfing really is judged by who can go out back on a shortboard, you know? And so I have talked to a lot of people who in their surf clubs, they do belly boards, especially in England. This is really popular, the belly boards, the pipos, the then the body boards, also just other surf craft and boards, lots of long boards and foamies, and just kind of getting away from what kind of the mainstream culture tells you a surfer is supposed to do, what they're supposed to ride, how they're supposed to surf. And when I asked the question, what do you think of the mainstream surf community, or mainstream surf culture, that's what I said, what is your opinion of mainstream surf culture, people said boring, dull, the same, not interesting, gross. I had a lot of people just be like, it's gross, it's disgusting. And then when I said, well, what do you think of queer surf culture, the answers were either doesn't exist, I don't know her, you know, queer who, so a lot of people either haven't heard of queer surf community, or if they have heard of it and have been involved, they say it's fun, it's colorful, it's like just like fun is the main word, right? And and so that was really cool.
And I feel like coming, just like turning it all around, and it's like it is really just about having fun. And I also got into surfing at a older age, where I'm like, I'm never going to be a professional. And I had to go a couple of rounds with myself to just kind of realizing I'm making peace with it. Like I am getting older. Like I'm not going to get into the WSL. Like that ship has sailed for me. But then once you kind of like, okay, making peace with that, it's like, oh, but having fun, just going out, just connecting with the nature and having a blast in the waves and see what the nature and can offer up and what kind of a wave the nature is offering. It's just like, oh, this is just fun and just to play around. And even though going out back is scary, like just staying in the foams, it's also just like having a blast and cheering on each other and just kind of have that support and the good lineup.
Yeah.
Because from my experience, I can see like once you go into those aggro kind of lineups, it's like, oh, this is going to be a hectic serve session. But when you have those lineups where you're just like, oh, that was such a great wave. You did amazing. Oh, that was so cool. You got one. And kind of cheering for each other. The vibe is so different.
So different. So different. That brings us full circle, doesn't it, Patrick? Because you were asking me like, you know, how do you keep going out there? Well, but that's how, you know, and I don't have a queer community, but, you know, that's it. Like, it's just my approach to surfing is just to literally just find a way to have fun. But just then, you know, to just on that note, it was encouraging when I was surfing in Australia a couple years ago, there was a little group of boys who were the cutest. Oh my God. They were probably 10 to 14 years old. This cute little group of boys on their little boards. And that's what they were doing. They were cheering each other on. Mm. They were being really, they were laughing, you know, they messed up, they laugh, and they just cheering each other and encouraging each other. And I thought, yes. Yeah. I hope that, you know, this cute little Gen Z, Gen Alpha group is going to hopefully help us out, you know, throw us a bone and help turn, you know, turn the tide, but whatever. Yeah. I can't think of anything else to say, but you know, and so I honestly feel optimistic, even though, you know, there's a lot of resistance. We're familiar with, you know, what's going on in the surf culture with WSL and the kind of popular publications. Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, shit going on with that. But also, I think when it comes down to it, the real people who surf that, you know, outside of competition and people trying to prove something, I think it seems encouraging, to be honest.
Yeah. And even like just like those younger generation, I just came back from a trip to Costa Rica and I was surfing this Point Break. And like it was a little bit of an aggro kind of up at the point, but I moved a little bit further down because it's such a long wave. So I could kind of move a little bit further down the line. And then I was surfing with these young local kids and they were like, oh, this is your wave. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my God, that is precious.
Yeah. And they were cheering. And like when I was on the wave riding, they were like, whoa, go, go, go. And I was like, how is this happening? Like, because I was riding my rainbow board, so it's so clear that like, I'm pulling out the queer board, and they were just cheering, having fun, and I was like, this is what surfing is all about. Yeah, just absolutely. And they made me turn around, and every time I saw them on the way, I was like, yeah, buddy, it's so much fun, and I was like, this gives me so much energy to be in the water with these kind of people. That I couldn't speak with them because my Spanish is horrible, but we made it in some sort of way by cheering and like screaming for each other. And it was just such an amazing experience. And as you're saying, like, hopefully the next generation are gonna kind of turn the tide, as you said, like helping this, normalizing or just kind of having everyone in and just having fun with it.
Acceptance. Yeah. Just acceptance. Like, doesn't matter who, you know, who wants to surf and how you want to surf. Like, so yeah. And you know, that gets into the whole subject. We still need to like educate people about, you know, surf etiquette, but, but you know, yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's fabulous. I love that story, Patrick.
Yeah. This was amazing. I'm so happy that you actually did this study and we can kind of have a proper study of how the surfing community have it or does experience the surf line or the surf community, because it is like a lot of times you kind of just feel or think, oh, this is just me that is feeling this, or it's like it's not necessarily that you know that this is everyone, but having like actually a proper survey and a study on it that can kind of draw some lines in it. Of course, it's not a quantity survey, but it gets some points across and you can kind of draw up some lines of what it is actually like, and also just the thought of not being your alone with all of your experiences. Like there are several people that kind of go through similar experiences and have the same kind of experience in the same kind of a community, which is a really inspiring thing to like, or just kind of like inspiring to for the community sense of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I really, Patrick, I appreciate it. You know, it's not, the study is not published, and it's hard for like research to just get out there to, you know, for people to read. So yeah. I appreciate you asking to like for me to talk about it so that it doesn't just go into a black hole somewhere, you know, because hopefully research does serve a purpose. And, you know, I can also send you the link. It's on a site called ResearchGate. So it's like free to read. And so I can send you that link if you want to put it in the show notes. And that way, people, if they want to read the study, then they can.
Oh, for sure I will. So that all these links are going to be in the show notes. And if you want to, you can kind of just go read it. I've read parts of it already, so it's really good. So, yeah. Thank you, Rachel, for coming on and sharing both a little bit of your story and especially your study.
Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you'd like to read the study, check out the links in the description. And as always, keep tagging us on Instagram and we will share your photos. And another episode, it's on its way. So until next time, have a good session.